WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, 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 what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, I'd say, well, we're going to start off the show with a chuckle today because I don't know if you saw this story, if you saw it on ESPN.com. I mean, it's everywhere. ESPN, Yahoo, Sports. I mean, in every headliner, sports headliner across the nation. It's pretty funny, if you ask me. I couldn't believe it when I really dove deep into the story and started to read the background on it. But, you know, it didn't take long for the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry to get interesting this season, ladies and gents. Now, in the second inning of last night's 5-1 loss to Boston, the Yankees starting pitcher, Michael Pineda, he was ejected for using pine tar. Now, we've seen ejections happen from numerous baseball players for using the substance of pine tar in the past. But, you know, this case is pretty interesting because, folks, the pine tar could be seen blatantly on Pineda's neck. I am not kidding you. Now, Red Sox manager John Farrell, he asked umpire Jerry Davis to check the, quote, shiny blotch on Pineda's neck, and the hurler was thrown out immediately, folks. Now, while Pineda admitted to using it, he claims to have done it only to keep him from hitting batters with errant pitches. Come on, man, you couldn't find a better excuse. He said, quote, "It was a really cold night, and in the first inning, I couldn't feel the ball. I don't want to hit anybody, so I decided to use it." Really, dude? If you're going to cheat. Now, granted, again, we've seen this instance happen many times in the game of baseball. I mean, you could argue and possibly make a case that there are so many cheaters in the game right now as we speak that aren't being caught. Without a doubt, we've seen this story before. But to do it blatantly, like the way Pineda did it last night, I mean, just washed his face with pine tar. I mean, clear as day. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that, you know, that Michael was this stupid, to be honest with you. And, you know, Yankees GM Brian Cashman, he made comments on the embarrassment of last night, saying, quote, "We certainly are responsible, and there's certainly failure on our part as an organization as a whole, that he took the field in the second inning with that on his neck. He was responsible for his actions, but we failed as an organization for somehow allowing him to be in that position. I don't know how, none of us right now, we're scratching our head, and we can't believe what took place." I think we all can't believe what took place. And, you know, when this story broke, I actually sent out a few tweets about it because it was hilarious to me when I first saw about it. And, you know, there was a lot of people who aren't familiar with what pine tar actually does. Now, if you look at the official rules of baseball, Major League Rule 8, it's right in the front of the playbook here. It governs behavior for pitchers, saying, clearly stating, quote, "The pitcher shall not apply a foreign substance of any kind to the ball," and that means any substance, folks. I mean, even if you spit on the ball, that's illegal. The penalty for violating this rule is immediate ejection from a game and a possible suspension. Now, what does pine tar do? Well, it alters the flight of a ball. I mean, if you look at what pine tar actually is, you guys know when pine trees, if you get pine on your hand, how sticky it is. Well, it allows increased grip for, batters and pitchers. And for pitchers specifically here in this case, it alters the flight and allowing the pitcher to have more control at the mound. And this is what adds another just idiocracy element to this story from Pineda. On April 10th, this is not his first run-in with Major League Baseball and violating the rules of Major League Baseball. On April 10th, the same month, folks, Pineda started another game against the Red Sox. In this game, it was also obvious that he was using pine tar, as baseball writer Dirk Hayhurst put it. This is a funny quote from him. Quote, "There was enough pine tar, firm grip, Valvoline, or Jell-O pudding on the palm of his throwing hand and back of his glove hand that most of the internet thought he had just watched the movie Naked Gun before taking the mound." Very clever, Dirk. Very, very clever. Now, in this instance, Boston manager John Farrell didn't complain to the umpires, and the MLB decided not to punish him. Now, even Red Sox slugger David Ortiz didn't mind, telling the reporter after the game, quote, "Everybody uses pine tar. No big deal," which I'm sure it's no big deal here. I mean, you probably see players use this all the time. They just don't get caught. But the fact that he had it on his neck, and the fact that this was not only his first run-in, but second run-in against the same team in the same month, just makes you just scratch your head. Oh, my goodness. I cannot believe it. I had to start off the show with that. Hilarious stuff there. Folks, we are taking your calls throughout this entire hour. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll talk about anything on your noggin. We have a full plate in store for you as MSU prepares for its spring game. They held their player draft for that game. We'll list some of the names and who got drafted and just kind of the matchups and talk about what to look for in a spring game. Also, the Detroit Lions, folks, their schedule was released today along with the other teams in the NFL. We're kind of break that down and just kind of talk about some of the more notable matchups. And also, it's Throwback Thursday, and we'll talk a little NBA as well as the playoffs are in live and full effect. You don't want to miss any of that. Again, we're taking your calls, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We'll remind you all that you can also watch Current Sports TV tonight as I sit down with Bob Bow, who is the now-retired MSU Alumni Magazine editor. You can catch that interview tonight at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. In the meantime, folks, here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 24th, 2014. Well, the Detroit Red Wings, they resume action tonight again, trying to get back on track and even things up against the Boston Bruins at the Joe. The Bruins have a 2-1 series lead right now. Puck drop is at 8 p.m. tonight. With two goals through three games, the Red Wings are off to their worst three-game start in any playoff series since getting shut out in the first three games of the 1945 Stanley Cup Finals. I can't believe I just read that. Man, it's pretty surprising stuff there, folks. All right, and let's continue with action from the NHL. Interesting stuff here. Minnesota's Matt Cook, he will be out for the rest of the Avalanche series. The NHL's Department of the Safety on Wednesday suspended Cook for 7 games because of his knee-to-knee hit on Tyson Barrie during Monday night's Game 3 of the Avalanche and Wild playoff series. Now, according to a video released on NHL.com explaining the decision, the play was, quote, entirely in front of Cook from the moment he steps on the ice and begins striding towards Barrie, well before impact is made. Now, the onus is on Cook to ensure that any check he attempts is executed legally and through the core of Barrie's body, which didn't happen, and now he will be sitting out 7 games. So, if you haven't seen that hit, check it out on YouTube. Interesting. Interesting stuff there. All right, the Tigers, Detroit Tigers, Marcus Semien, his 7th-inning grand slam lifted the White Sox over the Detroit Tigers 6-4 Wednesday night. It was the first career grand slam for the 23-year-old Semien, and it turned a 2-run deficit into a 2-run lead. Now, Detroit starter Drew Smyly, he allowed 2 runs in 6 innings, but Evan Reed gave up 2 singles and a walk, and Ian Kroll allowed a home run to Semien on a 3-1 pitch. Now, the Tigers will try to get even in Game 4 of the series at 2 games apiece today, 1:08 p.m. at Comerica Park, so that first pitch should have just sailed past home plate right now. We'll keep you updated on the score as this hour ensues. And the Detroit Lions, folks, the NFL announced its 2014 schedule last night, and the Lions are opening things up in prime time. Detroit will host the New York Giants in the first half of a Week 1 Monday night doubleheader. How about that? Other notable matchups include an October 26th matchup with the Atlanta Falcons in London and a date with the Chicago Bears, get this, on Turkey Day, Thanksgiving, Bears and Lions. How about that? First time that's happened since 1999. And the Lions close out the season with 3 division rivals hosting the Vikings before visiting the Bears and Packers to end the year. All right, and Michigan O-lineman, get this, Graham Glasslow will be charged with operating a vehicle while intoxicated. His arraignment date is set for May 19th with Judge Joseph Burke. Now, Glasslow has been suspended for parts of spring practice and the season opener against Appalachian State after allegedly committing the offense on March 15th. Now, the violation's maximum penalty is 93 days in jail or a $500 fine and or 360 hours of community service and rehabilitative program. So Graham Gaslow, he will be charged with operating a vehicle while intoxicated. Drunk driving, his arraignment date, again, set for May 19th. And how about this? And some more news, some good news coming out of the maize and blue. Michigan center Jordan Morgan, of course, who was a pretty good big contributor as the season dwindled down for the Michigan men's basketball team. Michigan center Jordan Morgan, he threw out the ceremonial first pitch in the White Sox-Tigers game on Wednesday night, saying, quote, "It was cool. I'm a big Tigers fan in my hometown. I love the Tigers. Just coming to a game and being a part of it, too, is a blessing." So there you have that. Jordan Morgan throwing the first pitch yesterday. Morgan shared first pitch duties with Olympic short track speed skater Jessica Smith, who is a native of Melvindale, Michigan. That's not too far away from my high school, Annapolis High School out in Dearborn Heights, Melvindale. We had a lot of battles with Melvindale High School. I didn't know Jessica went there. That's pretty cool stuff. So Morgan and Jessica throwing out the first pitch, pretty cool stuff there. And how about this, folks? You guys ready for some football? I know. It's months away for MSU's first college football game. But, hey, it's always a fun time during the green and white game, every spring game. It's pretty cool stuff. Now, on Wednesday, Michigan State's football seniors, they drafted their underclassmen teammates for the annual green and white game, again, taking place Saturday at 2 p.m. In the quarterback position, Connor Cook will play for the white team, Tyler O'Connor will play for the green team, and Damian Terry, he will float between each team, playing one half with the white team and the other half with the green team. Now, other notable white team members are spring standout Demetrius Cooper, Darian Hicks, DeAnthony Arnett, and Josiah Price. Notable green team members are Shalik Calhoun, Lawrence Thomas, Trey Wayans, and Jack Allen. And, there was another big surprise for me when watching who got chosen after Connor Cook did during that draft. We'll talk about, the green and white game and what to look for during the spring game this Saturday. And you can also weigh in on it as well. Again, 517-355-9527. And more news out of the MSU football camp. Michigan State offered Winston Woods, junior offensive lineman, also Nora Linsterman, on Thursday, according to Winston Woods coach Andre Parker. Now, the 6'7", 285-pound Linsterman was first-team all-district and special mention all-state. He also has offers from UC, Louisville, Georgia Tech, Rutgers, Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana, among others. So we'll see what happens with Noah. Again, he's a big, big kid, 6'7", 285 pounds. Noah Linsterman. You could possibly be hearing that name a lot if he does choose to join the green and white. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in again and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, and share anything that's on your mind. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Aaron, let's hit the break. When we come back, after the break, we are going to kick off things a little early here as we talk about the Lions and also talk about the MSU football player draft and what to look for in the spring game. Again, the number to call is 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. Current Sports returns in just a sec. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, now joined by Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky. How are you guys doing? You guys doing good?
I'm excited, Al. There's a big game this weekend. I'm excited to get some early scouting. I know you'll be there.
For the green and white game, yeah. Yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that.
Hopefully it's good weather, too, I'm hoping. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well. And it's according to the forecast now, it should be pretty decent out there. So
good.
Fingers crossed, because things can change in an instant. You never know.
It's Michigan. It may be snowing that game. You never know. And guys, I want to get your thoughts on this too. The Yankees. This Michael Pineda story. I cannot believe it. I died laughing when I heard about it first off, and I saw the picture. With the pine tar clearly on his neck. I'm like, I got to start the show with that. I mean, how stupid can you be? And this is his second incident this month, guys. What were your thoughts when you guys heard about that? Hilarious stuff to me.
It seems like, you know, he couldn't possibly have picked a worse place to put the pine tar.
Just right on your neck. Just, hey, I'm cheating. Look at it. I'm a cheater.
Especially when,
like, dude,
every broadcast has that angle where you get the profile shot of the pitcher
exactly.
as he starts his delivery. So it just seems like, come on, man.
Like he just asked for it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Me.
Like, please.
Daring you.
I'm doing this. Everyone can see it.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's embarrassing to say the least.
And, you know, looking at David Ortiz's comment, you know, when it first happened during April 10th and, you know, a reporter asked him about it and he's like, hey, everybody uses pine tar, which is probably true. I mean, so many players use it. But if you're going to cheat, if you're going to use it, I mean, don't do it. Just be smart about it, okay? Don't blatantly say, hey, I'm using it. Look, it's right on my neck. I mean, dude, it was just hilarious to me. Hilarious story. If you haven't seen the video of it or seen a picture of it, it's all over online. But I'm just sitting there like, dude, really? All right, guys, let's talk some Lions now. The Detroit Lions schedule was released yesterday along with every other NFL team's schedule. And I tell you what, I'm curious to look at the ratings from last night's schedule release because – the NFL, if they can capitalize on any ratings opportunities or just to breed some attention to their sport in any way, they decided to broadcast a schedule release of every single team last night. I tell you what, the ratings probably were through the roof. I guarantee they probably competed with the NBA playoffs, probably the NHL playoffs. Heck, they might even have beaten those two. I have no idea, but come on. It's like when I heard about that, I'm like, come on, NFL, can we at least have something to themselves here when it comes to the NBA or NHL? I mean, come on, you don't have to broadcast that. Like, really, dude? Totally overrated for me. But, you know, when looking at the Lions schedule here, some interesting games, some notable games here to really stick out. When you look at it, guys, I'm very, very, very excited about Turkey Day, as the Lions will be taking on rival Chicago Bears on Thanksgiving. That should be a good one. Jim Caldwell is being thrown into the cauldron pretty early on Monday Night Football to kick off the season. That's going to be interesting. And also, the middle of the pack, is just to break down the Lions' overall schedule here. They are in the middle of the pack, according to rankings from the NFL, in the middle of the pack as far as strength of schedule making is concerned, actually ranked around 16th here. They're ranked 16th in the league. They will play five teams that made last year's playoffs. And again, in addition to their NFC North rivals, the Lions will face every team from the NFC South, AFC East, and the third place finishers from the NFC East and NFC West. So it's going to be no walk in the park, but again, it's not going to be the hardest schedule in the world according to last year's stats, and that's why I don't put too much harp into this right now, because guys, we don't know how any of these teams are going to, how good they're going to be, because the season hasn't even started yet. So those NFL fanatics who sat at home and watched each and every team's schedule, you never know what's going to happen. An NFL season changes game by game, week to week. But, hey, NFL runs the world, and the attraction is still going to be there. So, Alex.
Yeah, no, that Turkey Day game will be exciting. I'm more excited about the Giants, Monday Night Football, to start it off, because both of those teams have had their ifs, ands, and buts when it comes to making the playoffs, when it comes to injuries, when it comes to things like that. I mean, look at the Eli Manning just tear down over the last year. I mean, that matchup, and then with the criticism that Stafford has had off and on, first game of the year, there's going to be a lot of opinions left and right. There's going to be a lot of analyzing right after that first game. I'm very excited for that game, guys. I think that will be a big momentum breaker for how the Lions continue their year, because then you're going at Carolina the next week, then the Packers, very good team, then the Jets. Those first four string of games are very, very, very tough teams.
Yeah, the whole schedule is interesting. I mean, every month has a marquee matchup or two. I think for me, just looking at it just game by game, I think November is going to be the make or break month for the Lions. They November 9th, they're home for Miami. They go to Arizona, where they haven't won since what, 1990. They have another chance to break that streak. They go to New England the next week, and then they host the Bears on Thanksgiving. So I think those four games, I think, are going to decide the trajectory of the season. Obviously, those division games late in December are going to be super important, but I mean, they haven't won at Arizona in forever. I don't think anybody sees them going to New England and winning. I mean, they might be out of it by then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the make or break stretch for me. A lot of interesting games. I mean, we haven't even talked about the London game against the Falcons.
Yeah, against the Falcons. That should be fun to watch.
Which, thank goodness, it's not a home game for the Lions. They just get to take one of their road games and go over, across the pond. So that's nice. But I think it's an exciting schedule. To me, though, it does not look easy. And I know, like you said, things change. And, you know, a couple of these teams, the wheels are just going to completely fall off because that's how football goes year to year.
Or someone will be injured.
But
you never
know.
We don't know anything.
Those matchups do not look favorable. I mean, Arizona finished third in their division. Who's the other team that they have to play that's the division rival? I'm not sure. But, you know, the matchups don't look easy for the Lions. It's not going to get any easier than it was last year. Last year they had a favorable schedule. We thought they were going to go, you know, run the table in the second half of the season. Just looking at it now, I don't see any stretch like that where they're just going to rattle off wins.
And that brings us to my point. I mean, this schedule being released, I mean, guys, it's April right now. Now, granted, there are franchises that you look at in the NFL, and you know that they're going to be consistently good year to year. The New Englands of the world, the Packers are always decent every year. I mean, there are teams you pick and choose out and say, okay, they're consistent every single year. They're going to be in the talks of making the playoffs and making a lot of noise. But still, I mean, we're talking about this in April where we don't know how good any of these teams are going to be, who's going to be leading the division. We can only make predictions on what we saw last year and the potential of last year. So with me, looking at the schedule, and again, I look at it, you know, looking at NFL.com, even though the Lions are ranked in the middle of the pack, but again, strength of schedule-wise, looking at last year and comparing it to this upcoming year, they're ranked 16th right now out of, 32 teams. Still, you don't know anything right now on how good these teams are going
to
be.
And we haven't even gotten to the draft yet.
Exactly. Yeah, we haven't even talked about the draft yet.
I think that's part of the reason that they televised the release of the schedule. Because people are so hungry for football. We've been waiting so long for the draft, which is now in May, that it's just they need something. You know, it's like throwing a steak into a cage with a wild. They need something to eat for now. And fans are hungry for football, and this is it.
It just shows you how powerful the NFL is. I don't know of any other North American sport that could broadcast a schedule release and possibly compete with the ratings of two other sports that are currently in the postseason right now. I mean, there's no other sport on this planet, North American sports, I should say, that does that. And, you know, like you said, Matt, it's like throwing meat into the cage where, you know, you have all these NFL-hungry fans that are worried about their fantasy teams and fantasy leagues and whatnot and the upcoming draft, that they're willing to watch anything NFL, even if it's a schedule release, for goodness sake. So there you have that. It's going to be interesting to see how the draft plays out, though, because now there's talks about, you know, I'm a big Cowboys fan. Johnny Manziel is now in the talks of the Cowboys possibly drafting him. So there you have that. It's Johnny Football
Fiasco.
As if the
Cowboys aren't enough of a circus.
I know,
they need
to
bring in Johnny Manziel.
Johnny Manziel to just add more media attention to that fire. So there you have that. All right, guys. Well, yesterday, a pretty cool event, an annual event that head coach Mark D'Antonio holds each and every year on the brink of the spring game that will be, again, be taking place this Saturday at 2 p.m. D'Antonio, Coach Mark D'Antonio, is challenging all of you out there listening to come on out to Spartan Stadium. He is trying to eclipse 50,000 fans or more. So that's going to be interesting, guys, because, you know, you look at the attendance of the Michigan game, and it was pretty funny because I forget what player it was, Ohio State player. I mean, Ohio State packed the house for their spring game. You look at Michigan's game, they had a considerably less amount than Ohio State's, and they're like, yeah, our, you know, Buckeye Nation certainly came out, and he kind of just twit-picked the attendance of the Michigan game kind of as a, you know, hey, we got you guys on this one. So it's going to be interesting to see how many state fans come out this Saturday. It's supposed to be relatively good weather, around 50 degrees. The sun is supposed to be shining, I assume. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. But again, D'Antonio was challenging everybody out there to come on out, 50,000 or more. We'll see if that happens. But, you know, they had their draft yesterday, which is always a cool event, always trash talking going on after the draft between players who got picked on the green team and players who got picked on the white team. And I tell you what, the big surprise and name that stood out for me and the name that's been standing out these past few weeks during spring practice is Jalen Powell. Jalen Powell, guys, he was drafted first on the other team when Connor Cook got chosen first. And then it was chosen too, because Connor Cook is playing, I believe, for the green team, is it?
For the white team.
So the green team had their first pick and decided to go with Jalen Powell. And it was pretty interesting. That was a very interesting pick. Powell, a 5'11", 206-pound redshirt freshman safety from Warren, Ohio. He joined them Wednesday. D'Antonio has compared him to the departed great Isaiah Lewis, and he has been collecting a team-high 14 tackles in two scrimmages, and now has the locker room stamp of approval with the high draft pick in yesterday's draft for the Green and White game. So I've heard a lot of praises about Jalen. You know, how fast he is, how his knack for the football. Again, he plays the safety position. He's being compared to Isaiah Lewis, which is high, high praise. I'm going to be very interested. He's going to be my X factor that I'm going to be keying in and looking at during the spring game and very well this upcoming football season. Another, you know, other standouts I'll be looking at, of course, the Green team. They drafted him first among safeties ahead of R.J. Williamson, Demetrius Cox, veterans who are competing for Lewis's vacated spot. So that's saying a lot right now for Powell. But, of course, Connor Cook, he was drafted first overall. He's a starting QB. D'Antonio, high praises about Connor Cook, how he's kind of evolving into that leadership role with the MSU football team now. First overall pick, going to the white team again. And, you know, Tyler O'Connor now I think has kind of solidified himself as the second guy other than Cook now. So 1-2-3 goes Cook. And then you look at O'Connor and then Damian Terry. And it's funny because I remember we had this conversation last year with the whole quarterback controversy and how, you know, Damian Terry was really turning heads in practice. But O'Connor has kind of evolved and become a better player. And, you know, the coaching staff is starting to know that. And also the players now are starting to notice that with him being that second guy. So a lot of things to look forward to in the spring game and a lot of key positions and areas on the field. That have to be filled with a lot of players leaving, of course, being seniors during last year's team.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting that you brought up Jalen Powell because for me, that was my biggest thing to look for in this game was, aside from the linebackers with Taiwan Jones filling for Bulla, they still have a couple key guys returning, but the defensive backs, you lose the no-fly himself, Darquez Dennard, who's going to step up in his place. A lot of people are looking at Hicks. Some of those corners will step up, but no. The safety position might be that new wrecking force for the Spartans. So very exciting. I'm also surprised at the different combinations that we have for quarterback receiver. I mean, R.J. Shelton, his name's been thrown around as a guy who's been a big playmaker. Mm-hmm. He's playing with Tyler O'Connor. He's not playing with Connor Cook. He's playing with Tyler O'Connor. Look at our own Andre Sims, who helps out with the show, playing with Tyler O'Connor. I mean, there's some other guys. Look at Shalik Calhoun, Lawrence Thomas, those two big guys playing with Tyler O'Connor. So very even teams. At the end of the day, you're not looking for who actually wins. You're looking to see who's going to be making plays at the end of the day. So When you're looking at the matchups, I think it's going to be very dictated on which quarterback will set them up nicely when it comes to the receivers. And on the defensive end, it's going to be whether it's linebackers or safety, which position is going to be most dominant. So that's kind of how I analyze the spring game.
And I think you do have to take a lot with – when you're watching a spring game, a lot of it has to be taken with a grain of salt too, because obviously it's a spring game. Nobody's trying to injure anybody. You know, you want to compete, of course. You definitely want to compete. That aspect has to be there. But it's a spring game at the end of the day. You want to run plays, get familiar with the offense, test and see different things here and there. But as far as, you know, taking somebody's head off and going all out 100% to do so – you're not going to see that during the spring game. So it's going to be fun to watch, though, because, you know, like you said, Alex, a lot of positions vacated from last year's Rose Bowl team have to be filled now, and guys are going to have to step up. It's going to be interesting to see how that competition ensues. So, Matt?
Absolutely, and I think it's almost like you were talking about with the NFL schedule. You know, it's April. Right. We still have a long way to go until the season starts. So I think, you know, just because Jalen Powell is drafted ahead of R.J. Williamson and Demetrius Cox doesn't mean he's going to be the starter going into the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still a long ways away. It's going to be a long summer. These guys have a lot of time to compete for the starting job.
Right.
I do think it is interesting that at least at this juncture, the team thinks he's ahead of those guys.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we've seen them come in from time to time, you know, filling in for Lewis or Drummond when they need a breather. And play really well. The amount of safety depth that Michigan State has been able to build up is insane. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, maybe a couple guys get injured and even the guys lower in the safety draft come in and play well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've just been so conditioned to have the next guy up, especially in the defensive backfield. It's really impressive.
Like clockwork, baby.
The depth
yep.
that they've been able to build. I mean, it's yep. just another man up, next guy up. You know, it's just a cog in the defensive machine. Really impressive to watch. I'm also interested to see Demetrius Cooper because we've heard about him mm-hmm. all spring. You know, people saying he's gained a bunch of weight and lost no speed. So I'm interested to see if they can, you know, kind of get another pass rusher in the mix, because I think the D-line this going into this season is going to have more responsibility for the defense's success than they did last year.
Right.
You know, because you don't have a guy like Denard.
Yeah.
You don't have
right.
a guy like Isaiah Lewis. Even though these guys are talented, they're not the experienced players that they were last year in the defensive backfield. So I think the line is going to have to ratchet up the pressure and kind of pick up the slack for the new guys filling in at the linebacker and defensive back spots.
Right, I agree. And you look at that defensive line last year, when you talk about guys, even though they had an outstanding season with Isaiah Lewis, Darquez Denard, I mean, named the top corner in the entire country. But that defensive line definitely put a lot of pressure off of those guys because they got to the quarterback so quick sometimes. I always go back to that Michigan game where, you know, Gardner just ate grass the entire game from start to finish. It was unbelievable. They finished with negative rushing yards during that game against Michigan. It was unbelievable to watch. So, yeah, I mean, and guys like Shalik Calhoun, his name has been thrown around a lot. I mean, him now, a junior now, I believe, stepping into a more of a leadership role, you know, with the absence of a lot of players like, you know, Mekhijah Reynolds and so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's gonna be fun to watch, I think, and to see how – I always like to see because – Even though it is a spring game, these guys are still competing for starting positions. So there is that added competitiveness to it that I talked about. And, you know, guys want playing time. And they're going to do what it takes to go out there and try to outperform the next guy. And that's the element that makes this time of the year so special when you talk about college football. Because, granted, we're months away from the start of the season. But to get those positions solidified and to see who steps up and who doesn't, that competition is so intriguing to me because I always remember Jairus Jones, that opening game, that unbelievable game he had, and remember Taiwan? I mean, he outplayed Taiwan, and he was actually the starter, listed as a starter, coming into that following game. What happens? Jairus gets injured. Taiwan steps up and goes on to have a pretty decent season, and now he's in a position now to possibly fill the big shoes of Max Bulla. So there's so many storylines here.
Good point, yeah, especially with injuries. You never know.
You never know,
same
man.
Thing with the Lions. You
yeah.
never know.
Jairus Jones, probably the biggest what-if
I know,
last
right?
year because he yeah. was –
He was great.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, he
and,
was.
You know, unfortunately, he goes down, I believe, in the Notre Dame game. So
right.
you didn't get to see that for the whole season. But he was on pace to, geez, have 24 interceptions on the year, something crazy like that.
Right.
One other thing I'm interested to see, not just the defensive ends, but the defensive tackles, just because they lost so many guys
right.
on the inside of that line. Joel Heath moves over from end. I mean, you still have Damon Knox. You still have Brandon Clemens. You still have Kittredge coming back off an injury. It's going to be interesting to see how they kind of solidified the middle there. And then obviously, you know, Lawrence Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lawrence
you know,
Thomas.
Talk about a high-profile recruit. Still waiting for that big breakthrough. It could be this year. This
still,
could be the
still
year.
Still waiting
it
for Lawrence year. Thomas. Yeah. You're still waiting for D'Anthony Arnett. You're still waiting for Aaron Burbidge. There's so many guys, recruited or not, or injuries or not, played that we're going to wait and see on. So.
Yeah, we definitely will. I believe, man, speaking about Jairus, before we hit the second break here, I believe Jairus is now trying to dabble a little bit into coaching now. So, yeah, he's been talking to D'Antonio, and I think D'Antonio is going to allow him on the staff to, you know, possibly get his feet wet in that area. So we'll see what happens, man. But you never know. You never know what happens in a football season, especially when you're talking about college football, trying to chase that dream of the NFL. So, all right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we have Throwback Thursday for you. Talk a little NBA. You can also weigh in on it, 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, joined by Matt Lucky and Alex Sharg. Well, fellas, it's Thursday, and each and every Thursday here on Current Sports, we take a look back and what happened in sports history on this Thursday in sports. Matt, what do we got, man?
All right, we got a couple things. I'm going to jump around here as far as, you know, chronologically. We'll start out in 1994 because, you know, we're in the middle of the NBA playoffs. David Robinson scored 71 points against the L.A. Clippers in 1994.
I saw that, and I was like, I had to do a double take. I had to do a double take,
for a center to score 71 points. I mean, this isn't, you know, Wilt Chamberlain where he just towers over everybody. Granted, he was 7-1 still.
Yeah.
That's incredible to get to 71 points in a game.
I had to do it. When I read that, I had to do a double take. I could not believe. I had no idea that the Admiral had thrown up that many points. And I always go back to David when he used to have those battles with Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon. We all remember that playoff series where, you know, the Marv Albert, what must I do series. And but David was certainly an unbelievable player. And 71 points in the NBA? That's unbelievable. That's crazy.
He's not shooting threes either.
Right, exactly. You know? Exactly.
He's playing on the interior. 1917, Yankee lefty George Mogridge no-hits the Sox 2-1 at Fenway. There's no detail here on whether or not he had pine tar on his neck either. I'm going to assume not, but you know, if he's throwing a no-hitter, maybe he was getting a little extra help.
Maybe, but he was smart about it. He didn't have it on his neck, okay?
At the very least, we know he didn't get caught.
Right, he
did not
caught.
Get caught. Exactly. 1974, the NFL grants a franchise to Tampa Bay. Of course, that's the Buccaneers. Moving on, Angels pitcher Nolan Ryan strikes out 15 Mariners in 1978, the 20th time in his career he has 15 in a game.
Wow.
Anytime it's a throwback Thursday, you can count on a Nolan Ryan stat. The guy was just incredible.
Yeah, he was.
1981, more San Antonio Spurs trivia. The Spurs blocked 20 Golden State shots to set an NBA regular season game record.
20 block shots.
20 block shots.
That is insane in the membrane.
I think that's what they call a block party.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt, baby. Did you guys see Dwight Howard last night, too? In the first half, Dwight Howard was all throughout the entire game. Dwight Howard had a very, very good game.
He did. But you score 19 in the first quarter and finish with 32. It's almost disappointing.
It is. Yeah. It is. That was the biggest red light from last night. All right, go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
1995, court orders Daryl Strawberry to pay back $350,000 in taxes.
Oh.
I'm sure he used the money that he got from Chocolate Strawberry to pay off that fine. Unfortunately, I didn't get to warn Aaron to cue that up.
I wanted to hear that. We used to play it all the time in the summertime, you know, man.
We should do it more often.
We should.
And then 1996, highest scoring baseball game in 17 years when the Twins beat the Detroit Tigers 24-11.
Wow.
You're getting your money's worth when you see a 24-11 final.
You definitely are. That's a lot of scoring right there.
And that's it.
Yeah, and speaking of runs, guys, just a quick update on the Tigers game right now. Of course, they are wrapping up their four-game series with the Chicago White Sox. Nick Castellanos, he is singled to center. Austin Jackson has scored, and the Tigers are tied with the White Sox 1-1 in the bottom of the second. So that's a quick score update for you as well. And also, you know, back in 1963, Matt, on this day in sports, the Boston Celtics won their fifth straight NBA title as well. So, you know, such a dynasty there. The Boston Celtics, just a storied franchise. Probably when you talk about the NBA, when you talk about basketball in general, Boston Celtics' name is so praised in NBA lore. You just look at the amount of rings that some of these players have. Like, I always go to Bill Russell, of course. I mean, he has more rings than he has fingers. I mean, that's unbelievable. And, you know, it got me to wonder, you know, here, I don't know if you guys have seen the Bad Boys documentary yet. I remember we talked about it earlier this week. And, you know, I got to check it out last week when it aired. And, man, it really made you think about, you know, just dynasties in the NBA. And the Detroit Pistons always kind of get forgotten, if you will, because, you know, man, you've kind of put it in a great way, because they're kind of sandwiched in between the Celtics, the Lakers, and then you have the Pistons, and then you have Chicago Bulls, where Jordan just ran the tables in the 90s. So, and, you know, in all honesty, the Pistons could have, and I think should have, won three straight if it wasn't for that incredible, terrible call, which they highlight in the 30 for 30 film on Bill Laimbeer as he went into foul, when he went on to foul, I believe Kareem it was, and Kareem goes in line, nails the free throw, series is over. But, you know, the Pistons kind of get forgotten because it was kind of an era where you have these three beloved athletes in Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Michael Jordan. When you think of the Pistons, bad boys, nobody liked the Bad Boys unless you lived in Detroit. Let's be honest with you. And it kind of begged me to ask the question to you guys and to everyone out there listening right now, 517-355-9527, what exactly is your favorite dynasty in the NBA? That's the question. Ooh. I want to ask you guys.
All right, yeah, that's a loaded question. Well, for me, I've kind of one way to weigh this. My favorite, I think there's a favorite, personal favorite dynasty, and I think there is like a favorite most successful dynasty.
Exactly.
Or judging by rings, the talent. My personal favorite has to be the Bulls, given the fact that growing up in that time in the later 90s, I remember, you know, 7, 8 years old, sitting on the couch, and that was my first experience with an NBA Finals, watching the Bulls win it in the late 90s. And then again, somewhat me being a little bit younger, but in the mid-90s, early 90s. So for me, it was the Bulls, and part of that was because you see a former Piston slowly go his way onto a Bulls uniform. So that
Rodman,
for me,
Dennis,
yeah, Dennis Rodman. That for me,
Sally, remember Sally was on the Bulls too.
That's right. That for me being a personal favorite, just because if you choose your hometown Pistons, one, I wasn't alive during that time, so I really couldn't say that. Two, there's the bias factor, but that's my personal favorite. Now, I'm going to let you go on to say your personal favorites because I want to debate with you guys till my mouth runs off my face on why I think blank is the best dynasty of all time.
Okay, well, for my personal favorite, I have to agree with you, Alex. I mean, I grew up, you know, in the 90s. I was born in 1990, and my dad, you know, my family, overall my uncles, I mean, they were big, big Michael Jordan fans. And it's kind of weird because my uncle, I mean, even though, you know, he's a, you know, Detroit Pistons guy, loves the Bad Boys, but he gives so much respect to Michael Jordan. And that's kind of the glory of the Bulls during that era and the glory of Michael Jordan, because even though, you know, you may have not liked them on the court and they won all these rings, you still respected them so much. And the way Jordan carried himself, I mean, he was a symbol, the national symbol for the game of basketball. And, you know, from everything from the shoes, the commercials, to the music, Space Jam. I mean, Space Jam is really, for me, when I fell in love with Mike. I mean, there's that movie right there, because it came out, what, 98? When I was 8 years old, I remember seeing it. I'm like, man, who's that guy? Oh, that's Michael Jordan. You just kind of just fell in love with Jordan, the Jordan phenomenon that was him. So for
and
me,
even 10
Mike.
Years later, you see Lil Bow Wow and Like Mike 10 years after
right.
He's even gone.
Right, right.
You're still Like Miking
you're still
after
Like
he's
Miking,
retiring.
Right?
Oh, man, I can't believe I'm thinking about Like Mike.
Oh, boy.
Thanks for that, Alex.
Yeah, that was a great memory.
I guess I almost feel like cheating because, to me, the best was just the 80s and the Celtics-Lakers. And mostly it's because they had each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Bulls just ran over the league. I mean, they were so successful that Jordan left the game because he was bored.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like, there's no fun there. It was just sort of inevitable. I think having the Lakers and Celtics both be at the height of their powers when they were is the best thing for the game, when you have two teams that are just dominant. You know, I feel like the Bulls, I mean, people lump in almost, you talk about forgotten with the Pistons. Mm-hmm. The Rockets won two titles in the 90s, but nobody cares because Jordan wasn't playing. So it almost like it doesn't count.
Exactly. I know, right?
Like,
it's kind of
like
you got
terrible.
A handicap.
They
you
won two titles and people still don't respect it.
Right, right.
here's the other thing is to bring up that Like Mike memory. I went with a little buddy of mine. He was 5 years old at the time. He wasn't alive for Jordan. He's never seen Jordan play. Mm-hmm. Yet you have the youth in today's age still trying to be like Mike.
It's idolizing. Yeah,
name one other player out there. You look at Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic. There isn't one player whose legacy still carries on to youth playing the game of basketball today. You don't hear any youths talking about, I want to play like Magic. Because
no, it was
it just,
when the Like Mike
you could argue
came
about
out.
The time. You could argue that it was just too long ago. But still, even today, even in 2014, you have youth. I've seen it.
Oh, I have
youth
too.
Youth trying to be like Michael Jordan.
I agree. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the shoes, to be
it's
honest
gotta
with
It's got
to
be the shoes,
it's
guys.
Gotta be,
it's
like,
got to
like
be the
Spike
shoes.
Like Spike said, man, it's got to be the shoes. Because those Spike Lee commercials with Mike, and to see how popular his shoes still are. I mean, you could go to a Foot Locker, Foot Action right now and still see the newest Jordans that came out. The man's not even playing. He hasn't been playing for years. You can still see the newest Jordans there. That are totally overpriced. If you had $200, I mean, you can still see his presence though there, and his legacy still lives on through his shoes, through other athletes who are endorsed by the Jordan brand, and you know, naturally a kid wants to know what's the Jumpman symbol all about. So I mean, Jordan was very, very smart and savvy business wise, and to be honest, it's opened a lot of doors for the modern day athlete, not just in the game of basketball, but in an array of other sports. So it's unbelievable. But yeah, if I had to choose, though, so Matt, you're going with the Lakers and Celtics dynasty in the 80s.
In the 80s.
We're going with Jordan in the 90s. Now, this begs the question, what is the greatest dynasty in NBA history? Alex, you want to? You're very anxious. You want to debate about blank? I want to know who blank is. Who is blank? All right.
Okay. I think that there are two teams that stand out in my mind. One I know is going to probably be a little bit of a shock to you. The first team that I'm going to say right now is the San Antonio Spurs. The reason being is because although that, yes, they when you compare them to great dynasties like the Celtics, like the Lakers, teams that have been dynasties for decades, this team has consistently, to this day, still, as the number one team in the playoffs right now, number one seed, has still, to this day, produced talent in the most modern way. They've taken their core group of guys. They don't have a Michael Jordan. They don't have a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They don't have a main Hall of Famer currently.
Tim Duncan would beg to...
Tim Duncan,
hold
man.
Hold on. But...
Tony Ginobili.
Okay. I'll
go ahead.
Keep okay. But they don't have a guy... They don't have a guy...
They play as a team, though.
They play as a team.
At the end of the day, right.
But they don't have a guy like Kareem or Michael Jordan who has consistently, year after year, been kind of the pop story of all of sports. And for me, a team flying under the radar like the Spurs have, albeit Duncan, they have kind of, in my eyes, flown under the radar, consistently winning titles. There isn't one guy that's popping all up over the map, being the national distraction. I think they've kind of been the perfect, ideal dynasty team to a modern day. Now, if next year they don't win, or if they haven't made it to a consistent decade, because I argue that they started becoming a dynasty in 1999. They drafted Duncan in 1997.
Well, this is the question, though, here, Alex. Right. When you look at this, you have to define. Let's define this first. What exactly is a dynasty?
That's a good point.
Because that's the question. Because the Spurs, let's be real here. I mean, they haven't. I mean, granted, you know, when they won those titles, you know, during the Admiral days with David Robinson, and when you know Tim Duncan came in fresh out of college, you know what I mean, and they were a great team, got a few rings. You know, but as far as how do you define a dynasty goes, I mean, for me, a dynasty.
Yeah, let's define that first.
The way I look at a dynasty is just complete dominance, winning two rings or more in a confined set time period. For me, that's the way I look at dynasty.
What's the time period? Because many dynasties have won back-to-back titles.
Right, right.
Some haven't. And people are, that's the thing with the Spurs, in that they've never won back-to-back titles. They've, with the Admiral years, there was a gap, and then they won again.
That's why I don't know. I would call them a dynasty. And dynasty is a big word. Like I said, with the Lakers, when, you know, the Kobe and Shaq days, winning with three in a row, was it with for them? That's an unbelievable accomplishment. Once you continue to do it year, then the next year, then possibly the next year.
So it has to be consecutive.
It has to be consecutive for me to call you a dynasty. In my view of it, I mean, if you look at the Lakers in the 80s and the Celtics in the 80s, they did it so consistently on a consistent basis. And you look at the Pistons. They did it back-to-back. So I would put them in that category as well. Jordan, of course, without a doubt. I mean, so that's how I would define it. Granted, the Spurs, though, have consistently been a top echelon team for so long that they do deserve to be in the conversation in some respect. To label them a dynasty, though, I don't know if I would do that.
It's a tough call. I do think the not having a back-to-back title takes away from it a little bit, but at the same time, I mean, they've been as consistently great as you can be in the NBA.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
For going on 15 years.
I mean,
it's really impressive, especially in today's NBA where there's just so much turnover, you know, things change in a heartbeat. For them to just keep chugging along is impressive, and I think it speaks volumes about the type of person and player that Tim Duncan is, that Alex, and you're not alone in this, kind of overlook him in terms of superstars in the NBA, Hall of Famer guys. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is.
Right.
He can prepare his bust right now. He's getting there. He's just not that larger than life superstar. He's a quiet guy. He goes back to the Virgin Islands in the summer and swims all summer. He's not doing interviews. He's not popping up in TMZ.
He doesn't
none
want
of that
attention.
Happens.
Right.
He's under the radar.
Not even commercials. I haven't seen. I can't remember even a Tim Duncan commercial.
And that's part of the culture of the Spurs, and that's why they're so successful. Is because it's not a me first organization.
Right.
It's all about us and we. So I think they're a different breed. They're a different breed of dynasty. But as far as greatest, you know, stretches or best dynasty, it's tough to beat the Celtics. I mean,
can't beat them.
From 56 to 86, they won 16 NBA titles.
Yeah.
That's more than half.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. Over a 30-year period, they won the NBA title more than half the time.
Right.
That will never happen
never,
again.
Never again. That's why, for me, that's my pick. I mean, the Celtics, again, they are looking at, when you walk into, you know, the Garden, and you probably look up, just banners everywhere.
Banners
I mean,
everywhere.
History everywhere. The line of players that have come through there, from Bob Cousy to Bill Russell to John Havlicek. I mean, KG, Ray Allen, even Paul Pierce have added to that legacy. Then you look at Kevin McHale, Robert Parrish, Larry Bird. I mean, you could go on and on. Those are all Hall of Fame players I just named. I mean, that alone. And look at the consistency. And then you look at their coach. I mean, who could forget about Red? I mean, that's unbelievable. And I just think there's no argument about it. So I'm going with the Celtics here. I think Matt's going with the Celtics. So, Alex.
My other pick would have been the Celtics. But I think that the Spurs probably, in my eyes, has the most potential, given that they could maybe pull out one or two more, given the age of their players now, just their overall kind of under-the-radar mentality and the we mentality that Matt's. I think that has been unlike any dynasty we've ever seen.
I think they needed to win last year.
Uh-huh.
I think last year, if they win the title last year,
then you could probably slap it on
them. Then we could say it, because, I mean, you know, nobody expected that to happen.
No, not at all.
For them, you know, 14 years after the first championship,
right,
with, you know, the same star, right, getting there again and being so close. I mean, they were a layup away in Game 6.
They were.
And a miracle shot from Ray Allen.
From Ray Allen, yeah.
From winning another title and really cementing that legacy.
Yep.
It's tough, though.
It is.
They have a chance to win it this year again, but I don't know if I see it. And as far as the Celtics banners, I don't know how they have any more room in the stadium. It's crazy, because not only do they have all these championship banners, they have 21 retired numbers.
21? That's
people who join the team now,
oh
like
my gosh.
Slim pickings. You're going to have guys wearing like 65 soon, because every number is taken. And sure, they might have handed out a few retired numbers a little too easily, but that's crazy. I mean,
it is. And, you know, it's so crazy. Looking at that history, too, I mean, with the Celtic name, if you even just bring it, what's so amazing to me now, because if you look at you talk about dynasties in the NBA, it's so amazing now to see, you know, teams like the Lakers and like the Celtics didn't even make the playoffs this season, to me. And, you know, it's kind of sad. If you look at those two teams, the Lakers, you know, you talk about that 80s period with the Lakers and the Celtics, that dominance. And to see not even, you know, neither one of those teams in the playoffs right now, it definitely hurts the game of basketball, because I think the game of basketball is better when you have those teams in the NBA playoffs. But, you know, these playoffs have certainly been exciting so far. You know, but as far as any dynasties right now, I think the Heat are definitely in that conversation too. If they can win this year, which I don't think they will, but if they do, I think they would definitely be in that conversation.
That's tough to argue, because
it will be very tough.
Three straight, four straight finals appearances.
Slap dynasty on them. Slap dynasty. Anytime you three-peat, slap dynasty on them.
Yeah, but at the same time, they might have that sandwich case too because of the Spurs. And then maybe after the Heat, there might be another big dynasty team in the future.
Well,
so.
No, because I don't know if before then, though, I wouldn't – before – if the Heat win.
Because of the gap between the Spurs and the Bulls, there's a little gap in there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean
– Well, that's what I'm arguing is I'd say the Spurs dynasty started in 1999 after Jordan, because Duncan was drafted in 97. They got to their first final in the early 2000s, and that was right when Duncan started to become a stronghold.
Right.
So I'd say that there really wasn't a gap as much as
because they won in 1999, right after Jordan won it.
Yeah, but that was a lockout shortened season.
It was.
So that one has a bit of an asterisk. Not really, looking back now, but at the time, you know,
right,
56-game season. And
the Heat did the same, though. The Heat
That's
won.
That's true, 66-game.
Yeah, the Heat did the same. They won a championship in a shortened season. So, you know, it's so many factors you have to weigh in when you talk about that conversation. But, you know, but yeah, if you haven't checked out the Bad Boys documentary, though, definitely do so. It was very interesting, to say the least. Again, we have about 5 minutes left. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Just a quick wrap-up with the, you know, with the playoffs ensuing right now, guys. I mean, any surprises so far? What are you guys surprised the most about the NBA playoffs? There's so
probably,
many of them.
Probably that the Rockets can't keep LaMarcus Aldridge from breaking the 40-point barrier.
Yeah. He is. L.A. is what I call him. L.A. is so good, dude.
Why
LaMarcus
are they trying
Aldridge
to guard
so
him
good,
with
dude.
A Sheik?
I have no idea.
Like, no. Come on. Let's have our seven-footer with cement shoes try and guard a guy who is absolutely unstoppable from 15 feet. What are you doing,
Houston? I'm also surprised guy drops 40 points, they really haven't double-teamed them that much yet.
No, he had 46 in the first game, now 43 last night.
But I'm watching him backing down from the wide-out arc, and he's backing down and doing a 25-foot jumper fadeaway.
Aldridge is so good, man. Yeah, that's the thing about him, though.
You've got to start double teaming him.
You got to. You have. It's so surprising. I mean, Houston's scheme to try and alleviate some of his points, it's no defense at all. I mean,
and they said before game two, you're going to see things differently this game. You'll see the changes during the game.
Not at all.
Oh, he scored three less points.
Right, exactly.
But he scores 40 and wins. That's the most important thing because we've seen big 40-point playoff performances before, especially with the Heat. But sometimes you can't pull it out. And that's the difference with Aldridge. He's winning and scoring 40.
And that was the argument last night. I don't know if you guys checked out halftime of that Houston and Blazers game. But, you know, Shaq, throughout Shaq's career broadcasting, he's always harped on Dwight Howard. Because Dwight Howard is arguably the best big man in the game. And he's always harped on Dwight, you know, wanting more from him, being dominant. And he finally was dominant in that first half. And they go to halftime. And Shaq's like, yes, this is what you're supposed to be doing. And then Charles Barkley's like, yeah, that's all fine and dandy, but I don't know if Dwight Howard throwing up this amount of points is going to translate into wins based on the style of play that Houston plays with. So eventually, I guess Charles is right. At the end of the day, that second half was totally a black and white appearance from Dwight in the first half, and then you saw just Aldridge just totally just take over. But you know, that's definitely a surprise. I never thought that. I didn't think that the Blazers were going to come out and just have a 2-game lead on Houston right now. The Wizards have been another surprise for me. They have been so good. And Vogel coaching for his job, that's another storyline that really has me puzzled. Now, the GM has come out, and Pritchard has come out today and said that Vogel's job is safe. But just the matter, it's just the fact that conversation even has come out right now has been surprising for me. So, interesting to say the least, these playoffs have certainly been exciting. Guys, you think the Red Wings will win tonight?
I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to come back strong. They knew that they looked lackluster. I think they're going to get more physical again. We didn't see it last game. I think they're going to do it this game. I'm going to look for the physicality. I'm going to look for it.
I'm hoping they can score a goal. I'll take that. If they score some goals, they'll have a shot. But they got to find a way to beat Rask. They got to find a way to get some chances, some quality chances, and just, you know, take some shots.
Right.
They don't have to be no-brainer, you know, empty net goals. But just try and make some plays, guys, because if they lose tonight,
I think it's a wrap.
It's over. You can start singing Fat Lady.
So are you choosing the Wings to win it?
I'm hoping. I'm not.
Come on, give me something, man.
I can't in good faith. After the last two games, I can't say that they're going to win. So
you're going with Boston?
Yeah.
I'm going with Boston, too.
It pains me to say it.
It pains me to say it. But I think right now Boston has that game lead now. And I don't know. It's going to be tough against Boston to try to salvage a game. Granted, they are at home. But it all depends on how they hit the ice from the start to finish.
First 5 minutes.
Oh,
huge.
Yeah. Huge.
Come
huge.
Out to play. Don't get run over. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
I agree, guys. All right. We'll remind you all that you can catch Current Sports TV tonight at 10 o'clock, folks. Scandal's over with, okay? Olivia Pope and Fitz, they're done with now. The season's over with. You can now watch Current Sports TV. You don't have to worry about Scandal being on at the same time, okay? 10 o'clock tonight, WKAR TV. I sit down with Bob Bow, who is now the retired editor of the MSU Alumni Magazine. I had a great sit-down with him. Don't want to miss that. That's tonight at 10 p.m. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Thursday. You've been listening to Current Sports with me on WKAR East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.